On today's episode, why vague booking will get you no prayers, working with Steve Harvey versus having the will to live, and fame, fortune, and freeing Britney. All that and more on today's episode of Bad Advice with Lori Beth Denberg.
Help me out, almighty Lori Beth Denberg. Give me the vital information so I get the red thoughts. Who do you? The church of Lori Beth is in session, and we're reading from the scriptures of vital information. Talk to my goddess and my savior, my LBT. Just tell me what's going on with me. Oh, my goddess.
This is Lori Beth Denberg, and thank you for listening to the Bad Advice Podcast. I am here with Clark.
Hello.
Clark Roser. I think, Clark, that I've given up on the hello.
Well, maybe just for this week.
I don't know. It makes me hate myself. It puts me in the mindset of the listener.
Yeah.
Who just maybe doesn't need that right off the bat.
All right. Well, you don't have to do it.
I don't have to. Exactly.
You can break your own laws.
My body, my choice. So that's just how I feel.
No, I get it.
Welcome. Welcome to your listeners.
Yes.
Welcome, Clark, to your house.
Thank you.
Clark says he doesn't feel too good today.
Yeah. So I was telling LB when she got here, I was very excited. Yesterday, the big day finally came.
You lost your virginity?
I got my shot.
You got your shot?
I've been vaccinated.
Oh, your COVID shot,
I'm vaccinated, Clark. That's me.
Well, are you half vaccinated or are you vaccinated?
I'm half vaccinated.
Oh, you got your first shot.
Yeah, I didn't get Johnson & Johnson. I got the Moderna. I got the big boy.
Ooh.
Which means that I'm really kind of sore and kind of out of it today because that Moderna kicks your butt, man.
How do you feel? What are the symptoms?
Well, I kind of feel sore. My arm certainly feels sore, like I got punched in the arm. But even like, it feels like all of my joints are sore. My hips are sore. My knees are like, it just kind of affects your joints a little bit. But it was really funny. I did want to tell you, when I went to get the shot yesterday, it was right up here by our house, by my house.
Okay.
And I go in and it was, we were out. They had the standing outside and it was kind of cold yesterday.
Yeah, it was raining.
It was all rainy and cold. So yeah, I went to go get it yesterday, last night, and we're standing outside in this cold weather and they're calling people in by name, right?
Okay.
If you're on the list, you have to sign up, of course. And if you're on the list, they'll call you in. So they called me in and I walk in and now there's another new line inside.
Of course.
So I'm standing in the line inside and the guy in front of me is probably 75, maybe 80-year-old Asian guy. And as soon as I walk up, he has a mask on and this is what I hear.
Yeah, good. No, student business.
And I'm like, yeah, like he's clearly talking to me, but he has such a low voice and it's covered by a mask that I can barely understand a word that's coming out of his mouth. But I seem to be responding correctly because he keeps talking to me like he's telling me something. And I'm just like, oh yeah, I know. I'm ready. I can't wait. And he's just like, oh, So now I'm kind of listening to this guy. And then I turn to try and, you know, I don't want to keep talking to him. So I kind of just turn so that I'm not facing him. And the next person comes in behind me and it's maybe a 55-year-old white woman. And she immediately starts talking to me. Oh, man, I can't believe they made us wait outside. It was so cold. Why are we waiting outside? Look at all these rooms. So now she's talking to me and I'm going, oh, yeah, sure. And then I turn back and the other guy is still talking to me. So I have two different people talking to me at the same time.
You should have gingerly stepped out and they would have just started talking to each other.
That would have been brilliant. It would have been way better than me just kind of tennis balling it back and forth. I'm just like, yeah. Oh, really? Yeah, that's great. Oh, no, that's pretty funny. It was so funny. And then I was there for like 10 minutes with these two people. It was crazy.
That's nuts.
Yeah. So anyway, at least now I have the shot. And
excellent.
I'm feeling a little sore today, but I'll be healthy tomorrow.
Well, this is what's funny, listeners, is just, I mean, obviously we know every state, even county, is doing this differently.
Yeah.
So as of, like, my dad got vaccinated because at a certain point after, like, essential workers and then you know, right. turned into like 75 or older, yeah. which my dad fits, and then Seniors. 65 and older. And, you know, so we're down now in California, or at least Los Angeles, to are you fat? Are you fat enough? Why don't you come on down and get your shot? So Clark is, you know, you are not overweight. A thin man.
No, I'm not.
So your wife, who is on top of everything in the universe, yeah. she books you an appointment. She texts me and says, did you make your COVID vaccine appointment yet? And I'm like, am I eligible? Because she's a teacher, so she went in. So I go, am I eligible? I don't teach anyone anything.
Right.
And she goes, yeah, as of the 15th, being overweight is, you know, qualifies you.
Right.
And she was very sweet. I will say this. Sorry, Clark, this is a little bit of information. She goes, well, yeah, 40% BMI or more, that fits Clark. It might fit you too. And I just wrote back like, oh, sweetie, it definitely fits me. But thank you for trying to be subtle. Like, you know, it was just so cute. She's like, I don't know if you might. I'm like, baby, I'm fatter than shit. But that was really nice. So I was able to make an appointment for my first shot
Yay.
On the 19th.
Yay.
And I'm looking forward to it. And I'm getting the Pfizer, as far as I know. So we'll be able to compare notes.
Nice.
But, you know, and I want to say, though, you were like, oh, it made me feel. But it's like, good.
Yeah.
Something happened to you.
Yeah, exactly.
And something is happening to you. And it's a small price to pay.
Yeah, I'm certainly not complaining.
Yes, yes, yes.
I am fine that I am sore today. I'm just explaining to the listeners that I might not be my big chipper self.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what's been happening lately. But
if you are out there and you find out, look to see if you are eligible, dear listeners, and get yourself an appointment and let's get this started.
Then they can start listening to the show without a mask on.
Exactly. Your iPod has a mask and you have a mask. You have to drench your earbuds in sanitizer every time you listen. That's not the way we have to live.
No.
Get vaccinated, get your shit together, and let's get to the point where we can all hug again.
Woo! That sounds good. But until that day comes, we do have some questions from some of our listeners, and I thought that you might want to answer them.
I do.
All right, so let's do it. We got question number one. Question number one comes from Michelle. And Michelle asks, I found out a couple of months ago that someone from Facebook who I thought was a good friend did something very bad.
Ooh.
They Vaguebook posted, confessing, and then just disappeared. I found out from people who knew them that what they came clean about was just the tip of the iceberg. And there's a whole other big mess of lies. I feel betrayed. And that part is hard enough to handle. But I'm also struggling with missing this person, or at least who I thought they were. I feel horrible about missing them because of what they did. And I don't know how to deal with the conflicting emotions. Help? Question mark.
Oh, my. So let's just address vague booking.
Yeah.
Because it's so annoying.
Yeah.
You know, the whole that search for attention, you know, need your prayers more than ever. Can't get into it.
Right.
Like, well, then no.
Well, then why are you posting?
Yeah, exactly. So you can get 59. Oh, I hope you're okay. I'm praying for you. What's going on?
Yeah.
You know, the texts and phone calls from people that actually have your contact information that you might have met in person. So vague book posting is obnoxious. Yes. Now, what concerns me / interests me that I find titillating is that it's Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle, you didn't tell us what he confessed to.
Yeah, and it's nobody knows. You know, everything is anonymous here. I want to know what this guy did.
We don't even know that your name is Michelle. You might be a huge liar. So, of course, then I'm left to wonder.
Yeah, it's the tip of one iceberg. Yes, I want to know what iceberg this is.
Is it like, well, it turns out he wore a toupee.
Right.
But then I found out he's a serial rapist.
Exactly.
Like, it's just, there's a lot to daydream about now. Yeah, because I always daydream about serial rapists.
Okay, exactly.
Anyway, that's a little look into my life. Well, and you also don't make clear whether you're friends with this person in real life or just on Facebook.
Yeah, well, she does say someone from Facebook who I thought was a good friend. So maybe this was somebody that she knew.
Well, she doesn't say it was a good friend of mine and I found out on Facebook.
Right.
So
that's true. Who knows? Who knows?
Who knows what the dealio is? But Michelle, I mean, depending on what this confession was and what it unearthed.
Yeah.
You know, you have to make the choice. Obviously, there's something in you that's saying, I do want to reach out to this person. I do want this person in my life. And if they've disappeared from Facebook and you have no way to get in touch, like, I don't know the situation. But if you were truly disgusted, you would be like, oh, fuck that noise. Yeah. I don't want to talk to that person ever again.
Yeah.
But the fact that there's some ambiguity to how you feel, mm-hmm. you know, you could do a lot of things. You could just choose to say, you know, for safety's sake, or better safe than sorry, I'm just going to let it go. You know, you could reach out to this person and say, look, I know all this shit has come out.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking about you.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe, you know, if that friendship continues, you can get an explanation.
Right.
You can get, you know, some idea of like not only what happened, but why.
Right. Because
you really don't know. I mean, depending, honestly, if it's like, you know, I'm a proud boy.
Right.
And you can just be like, we're done.
Yeah. I'm
you
out.
Know, or if it's like, you know, I didn't go to college and everything I said was a lie and I scammed my way into my job. Like, I wish you call back.
Yeah.
Call
please.
Back. Well, oh, you wrote in. Call back or write back and let us know the gist.
Yeah.
Michelle.
Or intimate juicy details if you want to throw those in too.
Yes,
we'd be fine with that.
Yeah, exactly. So you have anywhere from gist to full court juicy. Transcript.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's really up to you how you want to handle it. And you know how you feel in your gut.
Yeah.
And if some of this is the other people you know going like, you should never talk to him again, or this is, you know, completely cut him out or whatever, that might be their bag and they might have a good point.
Right.
But if you are ambivalent, you know, there's a lot of ways to have this person in your life without
right.
just saying, oh, it's all fine. No problem.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
that's exactly right.
And
be honest with them.
Exactly. Be honest and address it. It's an elephant in the room.
Exactly.
And if there's two people in a room with friendship and an elephant, if the elephant is too big, there's no room for the friendship, or the friendship can conquer the elephant. Another needlepoint pillow. Sometimes the friendship can conquer the elephant.
There you go. I like that.
That just sounds like a ancient Chinese saying that means nothing because I said it.
Well, I gotta feel like, you know, look, putting it in my own perspective, looking at my own friends list, if one of the people that I knew, it was my friends, killed a puppy,
oh,
I would never look at them the same
on
way
purpose?
Again. On purpose.
Oh.
I would never want to be friends with them.
Logan,
again.
Why did you do it?
Right? So it can't be that bad what this person did, because clearly Michelle is still willing to be friends with them.
Yeah, or she misses them. Like, whatever is they were adding to her life is still, you know, she still feels the need or the want for it.
Yeah,
so seriously, Michelle, please write back and just tell us what happened.
So curious.
Because I am not going to sleep until I hear from you again.
Okay, well.
And also, don't vague post people.
Yeah,
say what's
please.
Up or keep your mouth shut.
Seriously, that's very
you
good
know
advice.
Even and then there's the ones that like big job might be coming, can't tell you.
Right.
It's like, then shut up.
Yeah, tell me when you can tell me.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, let's move on. That just gets my cockles up. I don't know. Let's move on to our next question.
Okay. Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks,
I know
Michelle.
I yelled at you a lot, but
it's okay. All right, we're moving on to Brianna, and Brianna says, "Hi, LB." My name is Brianna, and I need some advice.
Okay.
I'm 30, and I'm having trouble finding a new job. I currently work full-time for a company that has destroyed my mental health and overall confidence. I'm not being paid what I deserve. The commute, benefits, and hours are terrible. I need out. I've been searching for a new job for a year now, with a handful of interviews and promising leads that led to nowhere. I also own and operate a small editorial outside of my full-time job. I have an associate's and bachelor's degree with numerous certifications and volunteer for Big Brothers, Big Sisters of America. Presumably, because of the pandemic, it is even harder to get noticed in the job market. It is very competitive, not to mention people keep telling me, at least you have a job, which doesn't help my depression any. I have a chunk of money set aside that I made from the sale of my home a few months ago, and I'm considering taking a leap of faith. I have enough to last me for 2 months. My thought is quit my job for my mental sanity, spend my free time applying for new opportunities, and maybe connect with a business coach to see if my editorial has a potential to be something full-time. The only problem is the money that I have set aside are for roof and sewer repairs for my new home that needs work this spring. I figured if I can land a new career with a better paying salary, I'll be able to pay for those repairs easily. But all this doubt and lack of confidence in myself has me feeling stuck. Should I take the leap of faith and kick depression's ass, or continue working for this company that makes me dread weekdays and continue to apply for jobs and hope I get a call back? Thank you so much. P.S. You were my favorite cast member on All That, and thank you for all the laughs.
Well, thank you, Brianna. I will say that our listeners send us questions with information.
Yes, they do.
They don't just go like, I don't like my job. What should I do? It's like, let me lay it out, guys.
Yeah, I love it.
Let me give you the background, the foreground. Let's just put this on the table.
Well, otherwise, you get a Michelle who's vague book posting about her vague book posting.
You know,
posting.
Michelle, I know we're giving you a lot of shit, but just come through with us with a follow-up, okay? Brianna, first of all, I feel like Brianna might just be trying to make me feel bad by telling me she owns a house and giving me her litany of accomplishments.
Right, a new house too.
Yes, exactly. Oh, I had a house, but then I sold it and I got a new one. House. And all of her like educational qualifications. At the end, she's like, I guess you wouldn't understand that, college nobody, high school dropout. Well, the first thing I want to address is that Brianna, you keep using the word depression.
Yeah.
I want to, people sometimes just say that as though, oh, I'm just depressed. And sometimes people are clinically depressed.
Yeah.
And that's a big distinction. So yeah. If you are having, you know, signs
clinical
of,
bouts.
Signs of depression, you know, if it's, I hate my job, it's draining. That's one thing. Yeah. If it's, I hate my job, I don't want to be alive anymore.
Right, I hate my life.
That's another thing. So only you can really understand how you feel and what's going on in your mind and in your heart or people close to you. So if depression means depression, please get some help for that.
Yeah.
And that could, don't take this the wrong way, but if you are really depressed, physically, mentally, and you get help for that, it could improve how you feel about your job.
Sure.
So, but your job sounds shitty as fuck.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's like, these are all the problems we already have. And then it was like, thanks, COVID. Everything's so much worse and harder.
Exactly.
So it is going to be difficult. And I don't know what field you're in, but if you want to take this leap of faith, which is a brave thing to do.
Very brave.
You could do a half leap of faith.
Yeah.
And just try to get some job not in your wheelhouse, not another job doing the same thing you do,
right?
But just at a less soul sucking company, but just a job.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that might be a load off your mind too, to just, not that it's easy to just be like, well, now I want a job.
Right.
But if you're like a content creator for a medical website, that's pretty,
that's specific. Yeah.
So, you could do maybe something, whatever else, still bring in some money and still use the money to pay for your new house. Mm-hmm. And, that could be another option. But if this job is just soul sucking, and also, is there HR that you could talk to? Is there anything that might be improved? I know that's kind of a long shot because workplaces are workplaces and bosses are bosses and personalities are personalities.
Right. And the fact that she was talking about how the commute was horrible, the benefits were horrible, the hours were horrible. It's like, I think it's more than just a boss or a coworker.
It's the entirety of it. Yeah. And a long commute, it could be a real drag.
Yeah.
Especially when you're like, oh, I have to get up extra early so I can drive a really long way in traffic to a place that I hate.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, my day started great. Like, I'm already at an 80% deficit before my first cup of coffee.
That's right.
So if that is truly draining you of your life and you have this plan, you have this cushion of your savings or your severance. That's another thing. Talk to somebody and say, can you lay me off?
Yeah, there you go.
And then you could get like unemployment.
Yeah.
But whatever's going to alleviate this, I don't have the will to live.
Yeah.
Is something to think about. And just another wrinkle to that is, you know, could I just get another job 10 minutes from my house?
Right.
You know, make some money and keep looking for a job in your field in the meantime.
Right. Also, she could try and cut down the hours of her current job.
Ah.
Right. If it's a horrible job, maybe you can work there. Maybe you can cut your hours down to part time. If you could last 2 months by quitting today, maybe you could last 4 to 6 months by just being part time.
Yeah.
And then
you'd only hate your life half as much.
Exactly. But that might be enough to boost your confidence and boost your personality back up. And
you could,
maybe this is all, you know, snake eating its own tail here. Maybe because you're depressed, it's making it harder to find a job when you're going on interviews.
Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe the smallest amount of change is going to be enough to kind of break you out of your kind of cocoon that you're in right now and start you on a new
your miserable path. Dark cocoon. But I mean, check yourself as far as what depression really means to you and how you need to take care of yourself outside of I don't like my job.
Yeah.
The rest of your life is important too, and need to make sure that you're taking care of yourself to be your best self, to be the best Brianna you could be.
But both LB and I have worked for horrible places that we did not like.
Oh, yeah.
We completely understand how that feels, being driving to work every day, just miserable and hating that you're having to go there.
And going like, I don't want to spend another day with Steve Harvey. Come on.
I do think then I know you, LB, have to say whether you believe you agree with me or not, but I do think that quitting, just flat out quitting this bad job with no lifeline or no link to what's going to be next is ridiculously scary. And I don't know if I would recommend
that. It is scary. And if you do it sweetly, maybe you can get a letter of recommendation.
Yeah, maybe.
If applicable.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Okay. Thanks, Brianna. Good luck with everything a million times.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Moving on to AJ.
Ooh.
Next question is from AJ, and AJ asks, weight hasn't been an issue for me. How do I relate to my fat family and friends?
Aha. Thanks, AJ. Yeah. Well, I'm on the other side of that.
Yeah.
And talked a little bit about it. That's a really interesting question.
Yeah.
It's important to have compassion for anyone. And we talked about, you know, in the body image weight loss episode.
Yeah.
What's the word? Episode. about all the different reasons that people eat and eat compulsively and are overweight. And there are, you know, medical ones, and then there's emotional, and there's, you know, issues run the gamut.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think if your fat family's like, we don't want you here. If you come by, we're going to eat you. But
ain't fat. You ain't nothing.
Yeah.
It's like a Weird Al Yankovic video. Ding dong, man. Ding dong. They're trying to force feed Weird Al food. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Clark is wearing a Weird Al shirt today as well.
That's true. I love Weird Al.
So if you're asking how to relate to them, maybe you're thinking like, how do I understand? Because there's all kinds of shit that people don't think of when you're fat. It's like the panic attack I have walking into a restaurant that only has booths.
Yeah.
and am I going to fit in this booth?
Right.
You know, the getting in someone's car and the seatbelt doesn't fit. Yeah. There's just like all these little things. And then you could say, well, don't be so fucking fat.
Right.
But we talked about the different reasons and the psychological stuff, and it's not that easy some of the time. So to find the compassion to understand where someone might be coming from. These are your, you know, your friends and family, yeah, like people you love.
Yeah.
You could maybe ask.
Yeah.
You know, and in that way, that's, you know, there's the difference between like, you know, I really just want you to be healthy and,
right,
you know, not bringing up weight loss, but saying, you know, I'm really interested because I know that there's can be a lot of emotional stuff behind this, yeah, kind of stuff. You know, would you tell me about,
yeah,
it? So that's one way to just ask. But another is to just kind of have it in your mind that there are reasons that don't have to do with just I'm a gluttonous slob.
Right.
And to try to understand that,
yeah,
it goes a long way toward how you see someone.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So that's my advice. But if the reason you can't relate to your family is because they speak French and you don't,
yes,
the answer is to learn French.
Oh,
maybe
damn
they're
it
just like, oh, croissant, croissant, mi amor. And you just don't understand.
Is it mi amor Italian?
Mi amor? I don't know. Ah, croissant, croissant, mademoiselle.
Hey, there we go. That's French.
So if that is the only issue.
Sure, sure.
Like, if you just don't speak French fat.
Right.
Then learn French
there
and
you
you're
go
halfway there.
Such good advice.
Yes.
All right. All right. Thanks, AJ. We're moving on to another question. This is from Mary. And Mary has a question about her family. She says, my son is 23 and still at home, and it's not healthy to want him home forever, but I do. Is that wrong?
I don't know if it's wrong. Thanks, Mary.
Yeah.
I have one example in my life that I'm going to vague book you right now to protect the innocent, to protect me from getting shit forever. And, you know what I mean?
Sure.
But I have a friend who has two kids, almost college age, and she keeps a tight rein.
Mm.
They are smart bunnies. Mm. They are accomplished. They are awesome kids. Mm. And they were just going to go to college in the state where they lived.
Right.
They are not going anywhere else. They are staying near me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a bummer to me because they are good kids. It'd be different if your kid was like a fuck up.
Right.
And you're like, why don't I send you to Boston so you can drink away your tuition?
Right.
You know, but these kids are like good bunnies. I've known them since they were young. And so there's that kind of control being, you know, over them.
Yeah.
And I feel like that could, and I'm not like super close to them at either. They're
right
not calling me and being like, oh, B, how can I get out of the house?
Right, right.
You know, so
you're not Auntie Lori to
yeah
them.
Yeah, I'm not Auntie Lori to them, just to Lex. I'm yeah waiting to have that conversation with Lex one day. It'll come a lot sooner. He'll be like, Auntie Lori, I'm already 7. Will these fucking people ever get off my back? Mimi is up my ass all the time.
And what's with this Weird Al all
yes
the time?
All the time.
Ugh.
So that's one way where, you know, you are stifling your kid.
Yeah.
You could be stifling your kid because of your needs and your nervousness and your worry and your
right
fear.
Right.
Or you could just have a kid that is like, you're cool, mom. Like, if he's a P.S. And by the way, I'm 45 years old and I live with my father.
Yeah.
So let me just say that. But, you know, I moved with him, you know, less than 5 years ago. And
yeah
it was because he had heart surgery.
Yeah.
And I was like, why don't I just live here? He's old and wobbly.
Right, right.
So, and I did live on my own for years and
oh
years
yeah
and years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And for a little while with the corn.
And for a little while with the corn, I did. I had a baby corn in my one apartment till it disintegrated. from too much hugging. So I don't know, Mary, from your question, if you are saying to him, it's safe here.
Right.
Don't go into the world. Anything could happen to you. Or if you just have a kid that's just hanging out. And, you know, that's been a thing over the last probably 20 years.
Yeah.
Of like, yeah, kids move back in with their parents. Kids older, you know, kid, not to say kids, children.
Children.
Of, you know, of parents.
Yes.
Those are the correct, those are the, like you teach your kid now the real word, penis and vagina.
Right, exactly.
You don't say like, ka-chonk, ka-chonk, and papini-peen. I don't know why a vagina is a ka-chonk, ka-chonk. That was weird. But, you know, there are plenty of older children that live with their parents for financial reasons.
Sure,
like
sure.
Me, it's financial and I'm there to help my dad not fall down or just do stuff for him that... Yeah. He doesn't have to do anymore. You know what? You've earned it. You don't have to take the trash barrels out.
Exactly.
So if your son's at home, I hope you're at least putting him to work a little bit.
Yes.
Trash barrels, take the trash out, rake the leaves.
Yeah,
I tried to think of a chore other than trash and it just didn't come to me. Gutters, do all that stuff.
Sure,
son.
Sure.
So whether or not, but you're saying I want him to be, is that wrong?
Yeah.
There's a difference between wanting him to be and trying to make him stay.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with wanting him to stay. You love your son and sounds like you have a good relationship with him.
Yeah.
So that's not unhealthy to want him to stay there. But I also want to throw out to Mary, come on, you just got a bonus year. 2020. If your son is 23 and living at home with you, I guarantee you he was living at home with you through this pandemic where you got to spend every single day with him, 24 hours, I'm sure, or close to it.
Maybe that's how she got hooked.
So you could consider 2020 as your special bonus year and be a little, you know, let him go to find himself. And when he's ready, let him go.
Yeah.
Because you've had this extra time that you get to kind of keep in your heart forever.
And there's a lot to be said. Another thing about like get out of my house or letting them leave is that at some point we all need to be on our own two feet.
Yeah.
And you live at home and you go, well, everything's just here. And you move to an apartment, you go, well, where's the cheese grater?
Right.
Well, you didn't buy one. Those things don't come with a house, you know? And the idea of making money and paying rent and really seeing how much is left.
Right.
Like I don't get to go to the movies 10 times because that cost $150 and I don't have that to spend. Now, you know, it's learning to be an adult.
That's exactly
and
right.
Living with you doesn't necessarily mean that he is, you know, stunted or stifled, but that is a benefit of letting someone go.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly right. But I feel like it's healthy to love and want to have your son around if you have a good relationship with him. Mm-hmm. So don't feel guilty.
Smushing, you can smush him and it's nice.
Just don't stifle.
No stifling.
No stifling. All right.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Well, that's actually a good chunk of questions. I thought maybe we can move on to our rotating segment of the week. And this week, I'm very excited because it is a flashback.
Flashing back with Clark and LB. Let's talk about some fond memory. Because it's a flashback.
Yeah. I love that jingle.
That's my favorite.
Jeremy Balin, our producer, does our jingles. That one just floats in my heart. He's so ironically earnest. So this flashback was spurred on by a Facebook thread of a bunch of high school students of ours. Our friend Steven.
Yeah.
From, we'll call him Steven K.
Sure.
He is a high school drama teacher.
Yeah, we all went to high school together. Mm-hmm. All of like two blocks away from my house.
Yes, and less than that.
Yeah, seriously.
I could spit on our high school from here. I know. Quite frankly, I'd like to. So he moved to New Jersey with his husband. Yep. They have a 14, 15-year-old kid now.
Yeah, he's so big.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And he works at Bergen County High School.
That's right.
And he's a teacher, and one of the things he teaches is drama. I don't know if it's musical theater. I don't know his specific, you know, job title.
Right.
But he, you know, like a lot of people, you see all these videos of, you know, an orchestra playing and they're on Zoom and right. then everyone's in their little box, but they're playing this music, or you see people singing and, you know, he is doing that with their musical this year, which is Working.
Yes.
By Studs Terkel.
Studs Terkel.
It was a book by Studs Terkel, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then
a documentary, I think, as well.
Yes. And it was turned into a musical by, you know, all the different songs are by different people.
Yeah.
And
Stephen Schwartz, I think.
Yeah, Stephen Schwartz and James Taylor. And a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this holds a special place in our heart because Clark and I and Stephen and others.
Yeah.
Did Working in high school.
In a very similar circumstance.
Oh, that's right. Because
it, like today, they were planning to do a different musical, but because of COVID and because of Zoom and because of all this stuff, Steven decided to try and do Working because it's kind of just like monologues. Most of it is just one person on stage talking about or singing about their job.
And this translates to our experience because emergencies apparently mean that you have to do the show Working.
Right.
Because when we did Working in high school, we were going to do Into the Woods. And then
we were cast. They had already started building the sets.
Yeah. And then the Northridge earthquake happened.
Yeah.
And it was so damaged. It was like, well, we can't do that. Let's do Working.
Yeah. That was pretty much it. We couldn't do Into the Woods. So we're like, what's the easiest, simplest, non-set play that we can do?
And Working is weird, but it's also fun. And there's this huge mix of different songs. Like I said, they're written by different people.
Yeah.
And Clark and I each had a couple. Well, we each had a couple numbers, and one of our numbers was good.
Yeah.
One of our numbers each was good, and one was just
horribly boring.
Yeah, not great. but we'll talk
That's probably what happens when you have seven different people writing a musical.
Yeah.
Some songs are great.
We should explain, is just kind of a study of American jobs, different people, how they end up in the jobs they end up in and what those jobs are like and what they do to the people. Like we talked, like Brianna.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you have somebody who loves their job and they're like, I love it. And then you'd have someone like Brianna from an earlier question saying, this is killing me.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of different ones. We'll talk about the bad songs we had first. Clark, why don't you go ahead?
So there's all these amazing songs. And, you know, James Taylor. You're getting amazing songwriters and they're big, you know, belty songs and Broadway numbers. And then like midway through act two, the whole play screeches to a halt when I come on stage as 90-year-old Joe. Joe's like the retiree, and he's talking about life as a retiree, and it's just an endless song that may, it's just him complaining. I get the mail. I check my teeth. Oh, if you don't check your teeth every day, you might end up getting a cavity. It's just like nonsense bullshit for
it's
four
just,
and a half minutes straight.
It is a slow plotting list of why his life isn't worth living.
Yeah.
And it just goes on. And Clark used to get so mad at me because I would just make up. It was hard to like.
The entire song is that one verse.
Yeah.
Da 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 da. And then you talk a little bit and say something about what just thought you were just singing about. So and I then would, it just loops. Da 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 da.
So I would make up other lyrics, which are always funny, and he'd go, "Don't do that. It's hard enough." Because I'd be like, "You kiss your cat, you go to Mars. When you get to Mars, you realize I can't breathe, so you die." And he'd be like, "Oh, don't put that shit in my head."
Oh, and then your horrible character. That was just hard. It was like a sad song.
Well, it was a sad. Well, part of it was. This character, now we're in high school.
Yeah.
A lot of these characters, like Clark was not a 95-year-old retiree.
No.
And nor was I like a 60-year-old teacher.
Right.
So I played the teacher. This is pre-Miss Fingerly on all that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, but I played this downtrodden teacher who's like, these kids today.
Wait a minute.
What?
Did you wear the same Fingerly dress when you're a teacher in working?
I didn't wear the same Fingerly dress. No. I wore like a drab brown one.
Oh, okay.
I didn't.
Okay.
But that would have been amazing.
That would have been so crazy.
Yeah. So the worst part about it is when you know, I go and then I say like the first thing is like, I'm a 65-year-old, and it's like, it laughs.
Right.
Because I was, you know, 17 in high school. And then the song is just slow and depressing. And so those were our shitty moments.
Yeah.
But we each had a great moment.
Yes.
Because Clark played Al.
Loving Al,
a valet.
Yes.
So let's hear a little bit of Al's song.
Yeah, okay, yeah, let's play this song.
I punch out a ticket, slide under the wheel, and right off the bat have it under control. Using one hand to spin her around without backing up. Put her straight in the hole. People ask me how I do it. I tell them that there ain't nothing to it.
So Clark plays Al. And let's now play. I don't think she had a name, but I played the cleaning woman.
That's true. You're right.
The cleaning woman probably, which is apropos of the song, but the cleaning women is probably the best song in the whole
play. Yeah, let's play this clip.
This great song, and I went out into the audience with the wireless mic and kind of sat on people's laps, and you know, and then when Clark and I are recounting, because Stephen is doing this, you know, working with his class, which it's going to be streamed like four times at the end. We're going to give you the link.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you can go and watch it and see what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah, and help out his school.
And help out his school and make him look so good.
Yeah, exactly.
But reflecting on those two songs that we did, Clark and I, as 17-year-old white kids, played like a 60-year-old black man and a 40-year-old black woman.
Yeah.
There were not a lot of people of color at our school, well, maybe, but within the drama department.
Yeah.
No.
I always say that it was a very mixed culturally wise. It was a very mixed group of students when we were going to school because we were in LA, you know, so there's people from everywhere around the world were in our school.
However, they didn't migrate to the drama department.
Exactly.
So it didn't occur to me until just now. And this isn't a political thing like we need more integration in school. You know, this isn't about representation or whatever. This is just in hindsight. I mean, it is, but I'm not like making a thing about it. Right. It's like, yeah, I guess was pretty hilariously prescient that we both played, you know, grown up black people. and it was just, but it was fun.
Yeah. Can I tell you my favorite story about cleaning women?
Please.
Your song. So while you were on stage and then, you know, walking into the audience and singing to people, and you were so focused and having fun with that song, I was backstage. I wasn't part of that song. And backstage, I was one of my two best friends. There was Logan, we've talked to, but there was also Boone. And Boone was my second favorite person in that school. And he was very young when we did Working. He was like 2 years younger than both of us. And so he wasn't able to be in the play. He wasn't cast as a part, but he did want to work backstage on the show. So he was running lights. And your number, Cleaning Woman, was the only number that was like a big kind of like, you know, Motown-y, flashy kind of song. And so it kind of needed the lights to be going a little crazy. And I loved every night I would go backstage and I would watch him do the lights. And he was doing his own dance number. He was back there just like running these lights, going up and down, bouncing in his seat. He was just having so much fun listening to you sing your song and flashing the lights. I always remember that. It was such a good memory from that play.
Thanks, Boone. I love you 100 times. I do love Boone. He's the coolest.
Yeah.
Anyway. So I'll say my other favorite song from Working is a James Taylor song called Millwork.
Yeah.
And it's just a gorgeous song. It's a sad song. And actually, Patti LuPone does a version of it. I think she was in Working. And I think she played the hooker. Because she had said she might have said she was the hooker, but she also said she was like the one part without a song. In the high school version, they are not doing the hooker, although we did.
We did. Yeah, we had the hooker.
Maddie the Werber, hooker. Yeah, exactly. And she did a great, she's a method actress. She made a shit ton of money that year and gave the performance of her life. But in this one, there's two things that are cut, which are a newsboy.
Yeah.
Which doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And then the hooker is not going to be in the Bergen County High School production of Working.
Right.
So I want to put this out there. Because
it's this upcoming weekend.
Oh, yeah. It's like the 19th, 20th, and 21st. Yep. So you got to listen. You got to listen to this podcast on time.
Yes.
Which if you're not, none of this matters.
Yeah.
And then you could, what's the thingy URL.
So if you go to bcts.bergen, bergen.org, that'll take you to the school's website. And then you just have to kind of find the theater department's page, and they'll have but you're gonna post a link to the actual
I'm gonna smash it on my Facebook and on my Instagram.
But if you wanted to look at the website for the school, that's the website you should
go to. You might want
to
check it out because apparently it is the number one high school in America.
That's what we were told.
So I hope that I'm not blaspheming Chatsworth.
Yeah, no,
who actually holds the top spot.
Yeah, that holds the top it's only the best high school in Porn County.
Yeah. Chatsworth is the porn capital of the world.
Woohoo.
So go look for that.
Yeah.
And we love you, Steven, and we love you theater kids all across the world.
Yeah, and if you want to help donate, I'm sure you could go on their site and contact Steven or contact anyone, and I'm sure you could donate.
Yes.
So let's move on to our final question of the day.
What is it?
Our final question is actually from somebody named Chase, and this is a phone call. we have a phone call message. So here we go. Let's play the phone call.
Hey, LB. My name is Chase, and I just wanted to call to ask what your opinion is on the Free Britney movement. It's been gaining a lot of steam here lately, so I was just really curious to know what your thoughts are. I'm a big, you know, believer in, you know, freeing Britney Spears, and I just want to know, you know, what we can do to, you know, help, you know, make this issue even more, you know, known, even though it is gaining steam, but I just, you know, I would love to help her. So if there's anything we can do, I'd love to know your thoughts. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you, Bunny.
That's Chase.
Chase. I like that name.
Yeah.
I actually just recently watched the, I think it's called Framing Britney Spears, yeah, documentary on Hulu.
Yeah, I believe it's on Hulu. It's the New York Times,
yes,
right?
So first of all, obviously it's a documentary,
yeah,
made from a point of view. It does mean something to me that it's come out by the New York Times.
Yes.
That means something to me. That
me
has
too.
Weight to me.
Yeah.
And I do, while I did meet Britney Spears very early on, I have a cute picture of us.
Nice. Did she come on the show?
No, it was I think it was like a Nick Takes Over Your School or something.
So an event.
Oh, I met her in Savannah, Georgia.
Oh, okay.
Which was one of my favorite trips ever. Mm. But I do not know her.
Right.
I do not, I'm not even acquainted with her.
Right. You met her once.
Let alone friends.
Yeah.
So I can't speak to that. But I did watch the documentary, and what I can speak to, I'll do it a little briefly, yeah, is being a kid in show business,
yeah,
and watching even people I love going through paparazzi bullshit and being misrepresented, and the narrative is the narrative that they want to tell based,
right,
on the picture they take. And that is all very real.
Yeah.
And in the documentary, some of that stuff is, you know, fully explained. And it was like, you know, the paparazzi are like, you know, we really care about you. How are you?
Right.
And this one paparazzo, which is the singular of paparazzi,
sure,
is, I speak Italian.
Yeah.
It, you know,
and
it's
French.
Just pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
He seems like a nice guy,
yeah,
but then he's like, you know, asked, you know, do you think that following her around, you know, hurt her, whatever they ask him. And
right,
he's like, no, I don't think so. And this is a guy where he's bothering her, and they explain like all the stuff she was going through at that moment. She gets out of her car and tries to smash his car with an umbrella,
right,
which are these famous photos of Britney goes crazy,
right,
you know? And it's like, oh, really? You don't think you were harming her? You think she was fine with it when she did that?
Yeah.
You know? And I just looked at this guy and I was like, fuck you.
Yeah.
And that's a real issue with being a kid or being a celebrity when you're not fully actualized, when you don't have control of the narrative.
Right.
Is that people make money off you.
Yes.
And that's what's important to most people.
It's odd. I was just thinking now, as you were talking, you know, we've been, you talked 2 weeks ago about how you've just been kind of stuck at home for too long.
Yeah.
And, you know, with COVID, you're kind of getting a little stir crazy because you have no alone time. You're quarantining, but you're never alone.
Yeah.
I feel like that's got to be a part of what was hurting her at the time, too, because even though there was no COVID, there was no quarantine. However, she was living a life where she had zero private time.
Oh, yeah. Most of the times that they show in this documentary, obviously she went to plenty of award shows and
right,
this and that, where things are more controlled. But what was amazing and really kind of sweet is half the time when they're showing the paparazzi going after her, she's like trying to go through the drive-thru at Burger King.
Exactly.
You know, she's just like, I just wanted a Whopper,
y'all. Yeah, exactly.
And then you cut to, you know, her reacting to that stuff and, you know, alleged, according to this documentary and according to kind of what I know about stuff,
yeah,
getting this bad rap, having her reputation turned into, you know, shit because it sells papers,
mm-hmm,
and it sells TV shows and monologue jokes. And that's just what she becomes. So the big part of the Free Britney movement is that she is under the conservatorship of her father.
Right.
So she doesn't have control over her money. She doesn't have control over a lot of things.
Yeah.
And she did not want that. Well, let me clarify. She didn't, I'm sure she said at one point, but in all this recent stuff that the Free Britney movement is really bringing to light, she hasn't been saying, I don't need a conservatorship. I'm just perfect. I can do anything. She's saying specifically, and this is from court documents as well, I don't want my father to be the conservator.
Yeah.
And that has not happened. He is still... You know, and at the same time, and this is what I've thought too over the years, but the documentary says it explicitly, she's working a lot.
Yeah.
She's out there doing her shows. If she's so unstable,
right,
that she needs, you know, to be coddled and you know, handled with kid gloves and not be able to make any decisions, but she's fine to go out and do her job.
Yeah, maybe she should take 5 years off and not do anything then so she can recover.
You know, you're so concerned about your daughter. Right. It's like, and all these people involved in this get money for it.
Yeah.
You know, as long as they're a part of her, you know, babysitter club.
Yeah.
They get paid for babysitting. So yeah, she's fine to work. She's fine to make money, which turns into your money.
Right.
But not fine to have, and you know, a cash cow is a real thing.
Yeah.
And it just seems that the Free Britney movement has really keyed in. What's funny is the two chickies that have the kind of spearheaded this. They have a, I can't remember what it's called. It's Britney Instagram, where they like are watching Britney Spears and trying to come to the truth. They're like, we really do our research. Like they're like Woodward and Bernstein of the Free Britney movement. So it was the documentary. I mean, check it out. And there's other documentaries there. It was really sad.
Okay, now let me ask you this. You were a public figure. Did you ever have to stay, like, have you ever had any encounters with paparazzi?
Well, no, I'm certainly not.
But you're so recognizable.
No, I am recognizable. Most people say hi. The only, you know, the few times that I have really been approached are people that said, hey, talk to us about Amanda Bynes. What do you think about Amanda Bynes? And I... you know, had no comment. It was really funny. It's when I was working with Karen at that nonprofit.
Yes.
And so I was sitting at my desk and there's people kind of in cubicles and I get this call and I'm just listening and I just say, I have no comment. I must have said it like three or four times. And so then I hang up and the guy at the next cubicle goes, what was that? That sounded serious.
Yeah.
But that was always, you know, and then those people say, oh, well, we already talked to blank and blank. And I'm like, well, that's fine for them. Great. I have no comment.
Right.
And those are the only times that I have really been approached in a way that was like yucky.
Yeah.
Nobody is like friggin' Lori Beth, over here.
Right. Well, you know, they are, but it's just not paparazzi. It's kids.
Oh, yeah. No, it's people coming up to me.
You get that all the time.
And they're nice and smushy. Exactly. And I used to get a lot of hugs and give a lot of hugs.
Yeah, I know.
Hopefully when this is over, COVID, I mean.
Yeah.
Hopefully when Britney is free, we'll be able to. It's shitty, and none of us can be inside that situation.
Yeah, but there's also, there's like a helplessness to it, too. Like, I don't know what I can do that's going to make her life better other than just not consuming the material that the paparazzi create.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the people at her court date to try to get the conservatorship changed. You know, there was a bunch of supporters out there.
Yeah.
Like free Britney. So, you know, making a ruckus makes a difference.
Yeah, it's true.
And this is a ruckus full of love.
Yeah.
Love ruckus. That's the name of my new funk album. So, you know, the most we can do is support Britney.
Yeah.
You know, I have some insight into just what it's like growing up
yeah.
in show business and what, and I was already like 18 when I started,
yeah.
but I've worked with so many kids
yeah.
and I've seen the parents that are wonderful
yep.
and I've seen the parents that are just awful.
Yeah.
And your kid turns out the way they turn out. And then, you know, they get a little freedom and some of them go nuts.
Yeah.
And some of them are grounded and it's such a crapshoot because growing up in show business is such a fucking fake,
yeah.
weird, wonderful experience.
Yeah.
And it really comes down to the people around you that make it yay or nay.
Yeah. Can I do one last story?
I hope you will.
So Lori Beth has been invited to be on the new version of All That a couple of times
oh,
now.
Yeah.
And your first time there, you brought me with you.
That's true.
I was with you on your first day back and I sat in your trailer with you. And then we went out to walk through the librarian sketch.
Yes.
And it was the first sketch that you were practicing because you were also worked with the girl that was taking over for vital information.
Yeah, I did a couple different sketches,
but
in
this
that
was
one.
The first one where all majority of the cast was there. So mm-hmm. I was put into this one area where all the parents were. So I was in the parent area because I was with you. And I have to say, I do have hope for the future of Hollywood because it did seem like the parents of this cast were all very sweet, grounded,
yeah.
happy, non-threatening people.
I actually went to the trouble to like get to know them.
Yeah.
And to say, hey, how's everything going?
Yeah.
And to ask and...
We were chit-chatting for a while. They all yeah. seemed super sweet.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, no, here are some pitfalls and
yeah.
here's... And I told them, please, if you have any questions, like, let me know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, but on the whole, they're just good. And the kids are good and
yeah.
sweet and funny and smart.
So I just have high hopes for the future of child
yes.
stars, because I do think that typical kind of stage parent has been slowly phased out for a more conservative, just, you know, regular people are looking for regular down to earth kids and not
yeah.
like talent kids.
Yeah.
So it's just gonna, I hope, cause less stress in the future.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm behind it. Free Britney.
Yeah,
the whole thing
free Britney.
Is just ridiculous.
I agree.
Thank you, Chase, for your question. It's so, there's so much to talk about
yeah.
being a kid and, you know,
I'm sure we'll have plenty of more questions for you to tell
yeah,
more
yeah,
stories.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But if you have a question for Lori Beth, you can send it to us at AskLoriBeth.com. You can hit us up on all the socials at AskLoriBeth, or you can just leave us a message with your name and where you're from at 1-855-DENBERG. It's 1-855-DENBERG or 1-855-336-2374.
And you can contact me personally at LBDenberg on Twitter. No, oh. I did it wrong again.
Oh, no.
God damn it. At LB Denberg on Instagram.
Okay.
And at Lori Beth Denberg on Twitter.
Okay.
Or you can, what's the other thing? Book
Hire
me for,
you, yeah.
yes. You can book me for a personal, I've lost my mind. Book
you
me
get the
Brianna,
shot?
This job is draining me as well. Let's get together and start a business. You can book me for a personalized video for someone you love
yep.
at cameo.com/LoriBeth.
Woohoo, this was a good episode.
I agree.
This was fun, I liked
Thank
it.
Thank you so much, everybody, for your questions.
Yeah,
every time
so
a
great.
New one comes in, we're like, what is it? I'm so excited.
Yeah, we're getting great questions these days. So thank you so much, and I hope to hear from you again, and we'll talk to you later.
Bye, Bucks.
Bye.
That Advice stars Lori Beth Denberg and Clark Crozier. The show is produced by me, Jeremy Balin, and part of the Seltzer Kings Network. Our theme song is written and performed by Natty Ward. If you or someone you love is in need of some bad advice, you can submit your own question on our socials, all of which are Ask Lori Beth, or on our website at AskLoriBeth.com, or for a nostalgic twist, you can call 1-855-DENBERG. That's right, 1-855-336-2374, and leave your question there. Thanks for listening.